the fastest, quickest, smoothest footwork. He is the Fred Astaire of jiu-jitsu, the Fred Astaire of judo, but he's the Dom DeLuise of pizza eating. I don't get it. I don't get this.
Everybody wake up.
Time to wake up. Time to start the day. Wake up late with Dougie. He's the only
wake
way.
Wake up late now, everybody. Wake up late, everybody. Wake up late. Wake up late.
Wake up.
Wake up late with Dougie. Wake up late with Dougie. Wake up late with Dougie.
It's time to wake up.
Wake up late with Dougie. What rhymes with Dougie? He's just so funny.
It's the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. Live from Danger Studios. Chorus praising, now you know.
We're the hottest show in this place. Wake up late now, everybody. Wake up late now, everybody. Wake up late now, everybody. I said one, two, three. Everybody wake up.
Live from Danger Studios in Coral Springs, Florida, it's the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. Starring Dougie Almeida. Now, let's start the show.
Thank you, Elgin. I will. Welcome to the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. I'm Dougie Almeida here at Danger Studios in Coral Springs, Florida. It's January 3rd, 2019. If we haven't said it to you already, Happy New Year. But that only happens for a little while longer. I'm joined today by two interesting guests. First of all, DJ and fellow Coral Springsian.
That's right.
Brian Offenther.
Offenther. Brian works, DJ yeah. BO works, however you want to get down, Dougie. It's all good.
Real interesting dude. DJ, first DJ to ever be in North Korea.
Correct.
And Coral Springs guy. Mm-hmm. Interesting how we became to know each other. We're going to talk about that today.
Yep.
And what it's like to DJ across the world.
Yep.
And doing all kinds of stuff. And local comedian, producer, Jay Risk.
Hello.
What's up, man?
Hey, thank you very much for having me on.
Yeah, well, it's going to be an interesting show because usually we have comics just sitting in here and then we just go over shit. But anyway, hey, we got a lot of things going on here, you know, like, dude, I mean, you know, interesting, A, how we all met. And then we also had some recent, you know, a little bit of controversy. And, you know, you don't know this, Brian, but actually Jay and I had a little controversy in the past. Now, this is interesting. And here, first of all, in all things said and done, something happened. Right, because things happen in life, things happen, and sometime a little after that, Jay had reached out to me and said, "Hey, man, I just want to let you know I apologize for that time, and it was a weird moment, and you know what, I didn't handle it well, and blah blah blah, and you know, boom, done."
So you guys are gonna kiss and make up now?
No, we're not gonna kiss, dude. Oh. All right, I don't know what they do in China.
Different show. Different
Maybe
show.
In China they fucking kiss. Well, I'm guessing it's not very. They're not very. You know, they're not very like loving people in China. Most of them. I mean, it's like not a lot of affection.
It's not a physically affection place. I think I could agree with that. Yeah,
right.
It's not how they're going to express it necessarily.
Right. You know, I learned some. I was around China one time. I was running around the streets and shit. I learned some Chinese. Like I learned how to say "excuse me, pardon me" in Chinese. It goes, "Get the fuck out of the way." I think it was something like that. At any rate, you know,
you got the accents wrong, but that was close.
Yeah, that was. Yeah, you want to help? Maybe you should help me. I could be a little more like Russell Peters when it comes to my voice. My wife's Cambodian, you know, and people are like,
Cambodia's great.
Yeah,
I love that place.
Yeah, you been, so good. We could talk about that.
Yeah.
So we had recent stuff. So we'll talk about some recent little comedy. We can get into that because now you know we're going to talk about it.
Mm-mm.
You know, but you know what? Fuck it. It started off, and then your worldly experience could add to this.
I'll kind of be a counselor in this situation. I liked how you snuck it right down on when the show started.
Well, why not?
That was real sneaky.
We got an hour. It's not like we got like this is going to be a two part like miniseries on Netflix. So
let's hear about it.
All right. So over about a year ago, and he could definitely feel. But this is my. About a year ago, there's a place right here in Parkland, a location that Jay was booking a show there. A comic was there and had a bad night. The guy didn't act professional. He was drunk, and he just didn't handle things very well. And that happens. You know what I mean? People sometimes, you know.
Show business. Same thing with DJing.
Right? I mean, it's got to be some similarity there.
Absolutely.
Right? So they fired you from booking that club. After that, basically it was over after that.
Yeah, it was. Well, they came directly to me. They said, "Well, we need to have a talk." And I was like, "I understand where this is going. I'll just bring my stuff out." Like, I knew where it went. And
right.
I knew what this guy had done. But I wasn't going to at all fight what had happened because he had done what he had done, and ultimately I was responsible as the producer.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't argue. So that's, right. that's what happened.
And in all due honesty, you know, I did tell you, as a fellow producer of shows, he has done that in the past. And I was a little like, you know, I said to him, I said, man, you know, I yeah, can't get careful, can't get mad at him if he's done it to you in the past. You fool me once.
Yeah.
Well, he had promised me after ruining a room before of mine,
right.
up and down, left and right, he had trashed a blind girl. And I had a running room for a year and a half at a college, FAU, that they shut down immediately. I was ironically being interviewed outside at the time on the success of the show. Well, he's sitting there trashing a blind girl. So he, oh, no, no, I'll do what I promise. Well, this guy, you can start telling the rest.
So, no, so he basically made a scene in the show and was, at any rate, so enough to again, say, hey, look. You know, and listen, it doesn't take much. Somebody produces shows. If it's a bad show, if it just wasn't funny, they could say, look, I'm not happy. So as opposed to a melee occurring and, you know, and all kinds of, you know, and the owners being called out Mm-mm. in the middle of the show. You know, here, as a comic, what you don't want to do, mostly at any venue, is you don't want to badmouth the venue.
Sure, same thing with any entertainment.
Right? Right? You're not going to say, look at this fucking place. They call it Winter Circle. Where I wonder where the losers hang out.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. You know, you don't want to, like... You know, because every time, especially in my room at Tavolino's, it's a small room. So a lot of times comics come out with that line, you know, last week I'm in Vegas, the week before I'm in a stadium in L.A., but to be in front of you 30 people. You know, and comics, I don't know if that, I tell comics now, I'm like, hey, I don't know if you realize this, but if you want to use that kind of joke, like 30 other comics have done the same fucking
Packed
opening
stuff,
line.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, by all means, if that makes you comfortable, what to do. So, I don't know, I got some buzz in my ear. So I just, listen, I understand it. You know, again, now this was a post. There's a post on Facebook from a year ago mm-hmm. from when this happened. Mm. And this incident occurred. And I put a post on there. I said, and the comic's name is Ridiculous, one of his stage names. So I said, Ridiculously Delusional. And then just last week, he's a friend of mine, the kid. He's still working. He does, you know, and he goes, man, if I would have known that you felt this way about that, I wouldn't have booked you on a recent show of mine. I'm like, all right, well, whatever, you know, whatever you want to do, but this was a fucking year ago, dude, and you kind of handled it wrong, you know. I mean, and my point is, nowadays people can't be told that they fucked up.
Oh yeah, people are super
sensitive, you know what I mean? Like I messaged him back. I go, hey man, first of all, the comment of being delusional, I'm a comic, so you have to have some bit of delusion in your mind to be a comic. So it's not like you're being slighted. It's not like I'm calling you a cheat. It's not like I'm calling you a fucker or an asshole, you know what I mean? Or a liar. Mm-hmm. You know, delusional is not that bad. Like, everybody's got to be a little delusional if you're in this business.
Aspirational.
Yes. You know what I mean? So it's not really that big of a fucking slight. So, but if you want to be vindictive, like, being vindictive is an evil thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because people will do you wrong. It's like you want to reciprocate, or you want to like revengeful, right? So vindication is a bit of a same, right? It's revengeful in a sense.
Yeah, that stays with people, too.
Right.
Even if they don't find the person eventually, people who are vengeful, they just carry that burden in them. You know?
Yeah, it's an ugly, it's a toxicity. So I basically shared with him. I said, look, man, if I was vindictive, you know, and somebody kind of did something to me that would keep me from ever referring them to, oh, I don't know, let's say Comedy Zone and all these agencies I work for. You know, so in other words, I'm saying, look, if you want to play that card, then just realize... Don't book me on your show then. You know what I mean? I feel, but fuck, dude, if that's what it takes, this was a fucking year ago.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a talk, you know, people are talking about it. They mention it here and, you know, and the comic's Ridiculous. And like I said, Ridiculous is a funny kid. He works his ass off. You know, everybody jumps into this game one way or the other. You know, one of the things, like, I didn't invent this wheel. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I'm just trying to follow along and do what I can. So, but if somebody does things differently, I'm not going to judge that. I mean, I'll acknowledge certain things against my own understanding, but I'm not going to say, well, that's fucked up.
Yeah.
But I'm going to, but pointing something out and saying something fucked up are two different things, aren't they?
Oh, big time. And, you know, that he crossed the line with me with this. I have a heart foundation where people are repeat donors. And the reason why is because I have 4 open heart surgeries, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I have people that follow me just because of, and they know, you know, out and clear, like, look, I'm a comic. This is not going to be, you know, so the mothers will follow me, not the kids, or, you know what I'm saying? So Well, they saw that he was like, stop stealing charity money, GoFundMe money, but accusing me of doing this. And what he doesn't know is I had backed so many different people with this. And I had, let's just say if we needed like, if $3,500 in donations came in for a project, I'd put out a $10,000 out of my pocket. Mm-hmm. So there was no stealing going on.
Right.
You can go through any book you would like. Well, I had these donors call me on crime, pissed off. Well, that's when I called the club, and they refused to take him down. They refused to apologize, and he used their promotion to call us fucking losers, and then we have weak hearts and shit. So offer still stands. We can go in a cage. That's it, straight up.
All right. So there's no making up with you and this guy. So, wait. Yeah, listen. First of
just
all,
just apologize, man. Either that or take the cage.
That's going to the in your personal life or your non comedy life. Yeah, and trying to.
Well, I've said this. I'm a fiduciary by profession. And I've had a fellow comic go to one of the places I book and say that I'm not respected in the comedy community. They were throwing these things out to bad mouth me to put themselves in a better place. And they were slandering me in a sense. So people have to realize, like, if you're going to say, like, I have a local comic now that's in this contest I'm in next week that says that I push comics down. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't help people. I basically try to snuff the fucking careers of comics because I'm an asshole. That's the image he's pushing on me, which it doesn't affect my fiduciary spot, so I don't give a fuck. So I'm not going to be as upset about it coming into my money, you know, kind of thing. And this guy has about as much influence as a parking cone. So I don't, you know, so I'm not too worried. So, but the point is that they have to realize that when you fuck with somebody's character on Facebook or you make these, you make these comments, you're crossing a line at times, you know. So like this guy says, meanwhile, I have comics that are saying, well, Doug took me on a trip to a club to help me get in. Doug's done, I book shows in Florida. You know, I give work to comics. So to make such a fucking statement, you know, but again, it also depends on where it's coming from. If it's an individual who's just sitting by themselves in their room in their grandmother's basement, talk all you want, schmuck. But if it comes from somebody who's at least being viewed or being followed or has, you know, powerful friends or influential friends, then it becomes more concerning because now it's like they're putting you on the side of the fence because of their ridiculous opinion of you.
Mm-hmm. And I don't mean to, I'm not tooting a horn here, but you know the accomplishments just that happened. So my Rolodex kind of expanded, let's say.
Right.
And now these people are going, hey, man, I know what, you know, stand up for yourself. So
right.
Those people are viewing it too, if you know what I'm saying. Yeah. And it's just, I can't have that happen.
Yeah. Well, dude, so it happens and shit. And I was actually going to have him call in, but I guess I'm glad he didn't come in because you guys would be going to blows in here, you know. And let me get you close to that mic there, DJ.
All right.
Right. And people can talk in and all they want on that one. All right, this is an interesting story. First of all, you're from Coral Springs, Florida.
Yeah, Ramblewood Elementary School, Ramblewood Middle School, Taravella High School.
Where the Taravella High, what year did you graduate Taravella High School?
2001.
Many years after I
graduated
Coconut Creek, which was 1985, by the way.
Yeah.
Marty says, shout out to Brian.
I think that's
dad. That's your dad.
Yeah.
Your dad's watching.
He's a couple blocks away. Yeah.
Is he?
Yeah.
Tell him to bring some pizza. We're hungry. If he's that close. All right, so Ramblewood, like I went to Margate Middle.
Uh-huh.
So I basically lived down Atlantic Boulevard
from
you, right? Basically about a mile up the road. Atlantic Boulevard and Rock Island, that's where I grew up.
Yeah.
In Margate, Margate.
Yeah, my mother had a dance studio in Margate.
Really?
Rockette Dance Academy.
I remember that place.
They still do RDC, and she's still teaching dance.
I never danced there. I wasn't a dance guy.
Oh,
but
I heard in the intro that you have the fastest footwork, though. You should be going into dance. And pizza, the two things.
Yes. Yeah, well, that's the martial arts dancing and the moving around, the circular motions and shit. But, you know. But I used to cut a rug with my old lady. But now I'm at that age where my fucking wife wants to go dancing. I'm like, really?
Uh-huh.
Go out with your friends. Go dancing with your friends. I don't, you know, I'm gonna sit there and get. You know, I'm taking her home already. You know what I mean? When you're single and you're dancing with the chicks because you're courting her.
You got the last dance, no matter what.
Yes, no matter what happens, I got the last dance.
There you go.
All right, so that's cool. And then, so you graduate and Taravella had some of the hottest chicks. Like I went to I didn't date girls in my high school because. Mm-hmm. I did sometimes, but I always kept girlfriends at other high schools.
Because
I don't want to be that guy walking her with the books every fucking, you know.
Oh, yeah,
I want to live my life in high school. I don't want to have my girl, okay, see you after third period. You know what I mean? So, So were you a ladies' man in high school? What was your high school like?
Absolutely not. I really didn't have a girlfriend until my senior year of high school, where in between my junior and senior year, I lost 50 pounds and I was just kind of like, fuck it. I want to get out of here. Right. I want to do my thing, and just stopped really caring. And I asked Deb Gober, who's now Deb Nin, out. She was a Taravella senior student as well. And she was my girlfriend throughout the senior year of high school. So that was it. I had my one high school girlfriend.
Really? How'd you do in high school there, Jay? You're a ladies' man in high school or what?
It was weird. I had a lot of summer relationships. Because our schools were divided up. There was north, south, east, and west. And I went to east. And I knew a bunch of girls from north. So every year, like June 15th, I would get to go, come hang out, let's go to the beach. And then all summer, north.
You had a Grease type thing. You were like John Travolta. Yeah, well, some summer loving.
Well, I just kept the other schools away during the summer. Yeah. And then, during the winter, I'd hang out on my own.
Well, cool, dude. All right. So then you, did you go to college?
Yeah, I went to the University of Florida. I'm a Gator.
Oh, really? You graduate UF?
Yes, I did.
What'd you do? What'd you study?
When I was in Taravella, I'm surprised you hadn't heard about me because I was the president of my philosophy club.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm.
So in university, I majored in philosophy, although I did a lot of work in the journalism department.
Well, that's interesting. I loved philosophy. That's what, when I went to college, I was going to be a lawyer.
Yeah.
Especially when I ended up going to Nova University, and that's now Nova Southeastern University. And I started taking all these Western civilization, modern philosophy, mm-hmm. like these courses. And I got into it. I never liked to read, but I read like 30 books in my first semester. I started taking philosophy, like Jean-Paul Sartre's No Exit, all this. And I was like, wow. I got excited and I started really getting, into something more than I ever have.
Yeah.
Like I'd studied accounting and finance and, I guess I have to, but I wanted to be a lawyer. So my counselor, one of my advisors says, you know what? I got to take an extra semester when I transfer from Flagler. So they said, why don't you take a few more, you get like a specialty degree or minor.
Yeah, John Stuart Mill, a lot of those guys were into law and philosophy. They're deeply connected, of course.
Yeah, like people ask me, like my success in life as a fiduciary, I had a finance degree, but mostly came from my philosophy background.
That's
great. Like whenever you speak to somebody, you meet somebody, you kind of like think, you're thinking from a different perspective.
Yeah, and people are like, well, what are you learning? What job are you going to have with philosophy? And I've always told people that it makes me equally qualified for everything.
Right.
I'm ready to go.
What can't you do?
Thank you, sir.
That's the thing. You have that bag and it's full of beans and you can think. The other people, they have one little area.
People have called me full of beans for a long time.
Yeah. Hey, it's very preschoolish. Full of beans, we're an edgy podcast, dude. Try to use some more edgy terms. All right. You're always thinking outside the box. So anything's, you're adaptable. You're not going to be like, and that's why when people say you're a cheat or you're this and stuff like that, I always think to myself, I don't do things. I've always been an advisor. My profession is a financial advisor for 29 years. So I'm always giving, that's why teachers. People who are teachers, we always said in the sales business that teachers are the hardest people to sell to because they're so used to teaching and giving instruction that when it comes for them to learn and make a decision, it's almost impossible because their mechanism is just to continually give out. So it's I learned in my early 20s, I was a bit righteous because I had this profession where I was making money as an advisor. So it got into my personal life where I felt like I was going to be the advisor walking through life. Let me tell you something. But then you're like, fuck it. Turn that shit off.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's just part of, adult education, of growing up. And you have to keep, the indoor and the outdoor open for your entire life.
All right. So you get your degree from UF and you say you got a philosophy degree and people are snickering. Go, what the fuck are you going to do with that?
Of course.
Right. And you're like, and your parents worry about that?
A bit, yeah. I think it was definitely some concern. I think they, I did research and development for the Hunter S. Thompson book, the official biography, which was written by the dean of the journalism department, and I wrote for the New York Times affiliate. Like, I stayed busy in the community, though, too. So it wasn't like I was just hanging back, man, just, sitting underneath a tree pondering stuff.
Exactly.
And I did try to do that, but I've always been really kind of an active guy trying to go get.
Wow. All right. So that's all right. So then after a while, where do you go? Because you have a real interesting like timeline here.
We can go through it, man. It's no rush.
Yeah.
No
worries. Well, dude, you know, I'm just
this
saying.
Is why I've been so quiet, man. His story when I started hearing outside. I'm like,
I mean, you look at you walking the guy. I mean, he's dressed like a. I mean, it's cool. It's like I don't know. It's like a Russian admiral pimp.
Well, this is a Chinese security jacket,
right?
And I got my Peace Corps bun, which is the next part of the story, and I got my Mongolian hat as well.
Yeah, that's an awesome hat. I love the ox blood red, dark red.
Yeah, it's from Darkhan, Mongolia, and I added some little shit to it, and we can talk about that. So let me break it down. Right. So I was getting to my senior year of university, and I saw a lot of my friends hanging out, working at coffee shops and just, you know, doing nothing. I was like, I don't want to be doing that.
Right.
I want to be doing something.
Living.
Yeah. So... I had always done a lot of different volunteer work and was active in the community, doing homeless stuff, et cetera, et cetera. And so I always wanted to travel, too. I was always taking day trips, Saturday adventures. So I figured the Peace Corps kind of made sense for me.
That's interesting because that isn't on a lot of people's, I'm going to join the Peace Corps. Because a lot of people don't realize you basically volunteering that you're housed in some sort of way, but you're devoting your time and energy to helping a cause, building a bridge or a house or a school or something.
Yeah, I mean, Peace Corps was started by JFK. It's a 2-year, 3-month program where you're volunteering in a developing country.
Perfect.
So at the time, I had like a little clothing business at the time where I was making clothing and selling boutiques. So they're like, oh, you would be good for an entrepreneurial thing program, you know, trying to teach people to start their own businesses and doing that sort of development. And I was like, I'm from Florida and I like Latin girls, so I hope they send me to South America.
Yeah.
So that's what I chose. And then a few weeks later, I got a message and they said that program's being delayed.
Hmm.
They're like, well, you can wait for that program. And as I told you, didn't want to be doing that. I didn't want to be hanging out. Or we'll send you to Central Asia to teach English. And I said, all right, let's do it.
You got yellow fever all of a sudden.
Well, see, that's
the
whole
Latin
thing.
Chicks.
See, that's the whole thing with it. Like a lot of people who end up in Asia, you know, they grew up loving anime or the, you know, Bruce Lee movies or whatever it is. Like I never really had that.
Really?
And I ended up in Asia twice and it's not something that I was inclined to. I've learned to appreciate some of the softer, finer parts of Asia.
Yeah.
But that was later on. So they send Central Asia. And so you get a letter in the mail and it's very mission impossible because they don't tell you what country it is. You have to open it up and it said Mongolia. And I was like, well, all right, I'll go to Mongolia.
Home of Genghis Khan.
Genghis Khan, that's right.
Yeah.
And,
am I mispronouncing it? Are you
but everyone does, yeah.
So it's Genghis?
Genghis Khan. Yeah.
Genghis Khan.
Yeah, so, I'll take it.
Is that like getting like the key to Big Brother? You just like open up the thing, it's like Mongolia, and you're like, holy shit.
Well, yeah, it's like Mission Impossible where you have like, you know, I think you have like 48 hours to respond. Like they really try to make it real funky.
Wow, that's
pretty
cool.
So I was able to time out the whole thing so that I graduated, I walked, and less than a week later, I went off to the first meetup, which was in Atlanta. To meet up and meet the other people who were joining the program with
me. Other people, yeah. So you're in a group, right?
Yeah, they do. In most classes.
Any Spanish chicks in that group get lucky, get a little lucky. And here's Margarita from San Francisco. How are you?
I have a story relating to that, which I'm not sure I want to tell on this, but I might because I'm sure she might be watching right now, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I'll just say that the name of the tour that I'm on, because right now I'm in Coral Springs, I'm going to be going across to L.A., it's called the Blackmail by Starlight Tour. Anyway, that's all I can say about that now, but let me continue for you. So I ended up in Mongolia, and usually for most countries they would do 2 classes per year.
Right.
People coming in the winter, people coming in the summer. But Mongolia in the wintertime hits about negative 40 degrees. So they quickly realized they could only do 1 per year. And so we were sent off in the summer to go to Mongolia. And they were really worried about me because even then I kind of had flamboyant clothing and stuff. I was wearing like, pink sunglasses, so just some bullshit or whatever. And they...
You're going to start like a whole new trend in Mongolia.
Well, I've tried it. I still stay super connected in Mongolia. But like they're worried about me. But it's only funny that I say that because... This was years ago now, and I'm probably the person who, in my Peace Corps class, who goes back there the most often and is still involved with Mongolia projects. So I just wanted to point that out to them. Fuck those guys. But I was in the countryside of Mongolia, and I was half of my time, 40 hours a week, was with a local school, teaching, helping the teachers, because frankly, the English teachers there couldn't speak English.
Yeah.
It's like a foreign language program, and they couldn't speak.
It's like the English teachers down in Miami.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So the other half, I was doing media projects and, you know, cultural education stuff, stuff that where I had my experience. So I had a dual broadcast radio show. One was in WGOT. The other one was in Darkhan, Mongolia, the city where I was at. And we talked about cultural things and really just try to make connections with stuff. I mean, Peace Corps is, you know, you're really left out there. You have connections with the main program, but it's really what you make of it,
right?
You know, and I really try to do what I can, and I still have connections that I made there that I continue to this day.
Cool. That's, I mean, Mongolia. I love Mongolian beef.
That's from Taiwan.
Oh, is it? Why do they call it Mongolian beef?
It's like French fries.
Oh, is it? Okay. Yeah. I won't fuck up then. I won't go to Mongolia and go, hey. You got beef here, or you just call it beef?
Well, if you want to know about Mongolian food, you should check out Art Gear, ArtGer, on Facebook and YouTube. And we produce videos about Mongolian culture made with a guy named Nargi, who's one of my real good buddies. And I produced to be Mongolia's first Elvis impersonator.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that got a lot of traction online and stuff.
That's
and
funny.
He's a super interesting dude.
Now, the people of Mongolia are known to be tough because when it's 40 degrees at some
negative
point,
40.
Negative 40 degrees, and it's a tough land. I mean, that's where Genghis Khan
beautiful
came from.
I was just going to say yes.
Yeah, great. Okay, well, thanks. I don't know. But you know what I mean? Don't pay you. I'm shit. So, you know what I mean? You know, but and it's a tough fucking, like, you think of they got the cowboys out there, they're on horseback. You know what I mean? You think back in history, you know.
Genghis Khan had the biggest land empire ever.
Yeah.
I mean, they conquered a lot of stuff, and they're just a tough people. They drink vodka.
Right.
And you don't stop until the bottle's finished.
Yeah.
And you eat meat, and, you know, vegetables is for the farm animals. We eat meat. You know, these are just tough, tough dudes.
How's the life expectancy out there?
It's a bit rough. Obviously, you know, you're getting less and less nomadic peoples, but, you know, the pollution in Ulaanbaatar is bad. I couldn't tell you what it is, but, you know, Mongolian people, it's a real beautiful culture. You know, it's one of the few places in the world still truly tied to its history.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, definitely true to it. All right. So that you're in the Peace Corps. You do a noble thing, right? That's now good. And, you know, people, that's very notable, right? And somebody says you spend time in the Peace Corps.
It's very notable.
Yeah, like I helped. I was a mentor for the boys' clubs.
Great.
And, you know, for young kids and stuff. So that always felt good to do that. But, you know, I didn't fly across the world and teach somebody how to make fire.
See, I've done a lot of charity work, but that's like intense, concentrated, you know. You're giving yourself fully, and that is awesome.
But at the same time, that's a lifestyle, man.
You really
about learning, and you know, like, you know, he's not gonna. I don't imagine you ever hashtag FML. You know what I mean?
No, you know what I mean? Yeah, it took me a second to even realize what that was. I mean, let me say it like this: this is one thing that I can say because people ask me about Peace Corps a lot, and I can say that going to a developing country right out after being in university was a great decision.
Yeah.
I can go back and forth on different issues, but going from, you know, staying up late and going to classes sometimes and doing that thing to going to where, you know, we need to get hot, wood for the fire in the winter or you're going to freeze to death.
Yeah.
Like that's just a big shift and it was really important.
I think a lot of kids today in our society would do them well to take a nice trip overseas.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To experience. You know,
just going abroad, I come back and I watch social media and I'm like, you talk so much shit because you have not been invaded yet.
No,
see what I'm saying?
Like, there's parts of the country that, you know, people walking around with fucking machine guns and, you know, and kind of like we talked the other day on the show about the Louis C.K. joke being that we're from here, you know, and the joke is not minimizing the tragedy that occurred on that fucking day. It's basically saying, hey, because you were part of that situation doesn't put you in a position of knowledgeable or, you know what I mean? Like, and that's what the joke's about. Like, I don't know anyone, you know, if you want, you know, tell us what it'd be like if you being in that situation. Like, I would love anybody who's been in that type. I've been in a firefight, a couple of different firefights in a sense. So it would be great knowledge to hear, hey, how did the people react?
You have some insight for sure.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's shit that it's priceless. But, you know, how you feel about the ideology of gun laws and shit like that. And There's more people that are, you know, a lot more qualified to get that information from.
You obviously offer one insight and you have one perspective, but, you know, it's interesting when you go to Japan and you'll meet people who are, you know, they could tell you everything about soul music in the 1960s in America. Right. And you could think you were a real groovy guy in the 60s in the U.S. You know, you lived through that period, but have you studied it? Do you know what you're doing? So there's a perspective that you can have from experiencing something, but always having an outside one is always valuable.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And that to me is all funny, that joke, because, you know, being that we talked about it, we only live a half a mile from the school where we're at here, and being a comic. And Dan Weiss is a comic in South Florida. He's a very dirty comic, actually.
Yeah, Dan.
He called it tasteless, and we're like, everybody's like, what the fuck, dude? You tell a joke about banging your grandma or something.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, as a comic, you got to stand by that. You know, that's freedom of speech, man.
You know, there's a lot of different changes happening in the American liberal community, and I just tell people, I am a Allen Ginsberg liberal. I'm an Abby Hoffman liberal. These are people who were particularly un-PC. Like, they really went out of their way to push boundaries to see where they are. And I think that's a valuable thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really tragic here. Like, I was at the Robot last night, did the open mic, and I do a joke. I call it my Me Too joke, hashtag not me. It's, you know, it's basically joking about it. And there was women sitting on the back part of in the room. And I said, you know, first of all, I said, ladies, hashtag not me, you know, whatever, Me Too. And some girl goes, are you assuming their gender? I'm like, oh, my God, you know, give me a fucking break. Like, I do have eyes, you know, I'm you know, I do know titties and legs and balls. And, you know, I can make some general observations and, you know, like that video on Facebook of that one guy getting all pissed off at the video game store. That was it was going viral on Facebook. The guy was mad, like, you call me ma'am. and she wants to be treated like a lady. Meanwhile, she's trying to tell the guy to go outside and, you know, put him up.
I mean, yeah, I think the intention of the words are important. Words are important. Let's just say that. And that's why comedy is great. And there's beautiful comedy and tragic comedy and everything else. But you also need to look at what the intentions are and what the person's trying to do and explore. Right. And also just respect the process. He's in a comedy club. He's not recording a special saying, this is my final thesis on Parkland. He should be able to say what the hell he wants.
Yeah, he definitely should. All right. So now we've gone through the Peace Corps. What's next now? So now you've been around. You got to.
Well, I'll run through a couple of things. After I finished my Peace Corps experience, I moved to the capital, Ulaanbaatar, to work on media projects and worked on a children's education book and all sorts of different things. Ran a nightclub called the Cross-Eyed Gypsy. But I got sick of the Mongolian winter and getting beat up and all that sort of fun stuff.
You got beat up there on there?
Yeah, I got a nice black eye. And, you know, I got, you know, people, you know, they like to fight. And at the time, there was a ultra-nationalistic group.
You were looked at as an outsider at times?
A bit. And there were people who brought me in as family and friends, and I'm still connected to those people as well. But
there's still Mongolia, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's kind of like being in Brooklyn.
A bit. But so there's a group called, I call the Smurf Nazis.
Yeah.
Called Dire Mongol, they are ultra-nationalists, neo-Nazi Mongolians. And they had a blue background to a swastika. It's called Dire Mongol. And it's a very fascinating thing. I mean, I'm Jewish. They couldn't give a shit that I was Jewish. It's just they were into the sort of militaristic Nazi imagery and such.
And that was the driving force of this whole group.
That was dealing with the Dire Mongol guys, especially because I was going to heavy metal shows and going into alternative scenes and stuff. They didn't really necessarily, you know, need a white guy walking around and shit. Man. That was their perspective. That's not everyone's perspective in Mongolia. Yeah, people should go visit Art Gare. I'll arrange a tour for you. I've arranged all sorts of tours in Mongolia. But that's an element there. And
what town doesn't have their own element?
There you go.
Yeah, but it's interesting that could you imagine if you travel there and you see some guy with a blue swastika there?
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to be like, oh, I'm going to go put some eye makeup on. How you guys are doing?
Oh, boy. I'm not even going to touch that one. So after that, I moved to South Florida, where I'm from, Coral Springs, went back home. Probably wasn't the best decision overall, but I did get a job working as a dancer and MC for Platinum Gold Entertainment.
Yeah, I've heard of them.
Yeah, and did quinceañeras and bar mitzvahs and bat mitzvahs. And through that, a connection through that, I ended up dancing behind the Who at the Super Bowl when the Super Bowl was down here.
Yeah.
How was that?
Uh, The Super Bowl experience?
Yeah, dancing behind the Who as a backup dancer.
Well, you can look it up online. You can't see me, but there's a light. That's awesome. Had a choreographed dance routine that we did the light. I mean, it's what it was. I mean,
isn't Up With People, that big group usually does that shit at these big events?
Yeah,
you got like 1,000 people dressed in red, yellow, and green and shit.
Yeah, this wasn't like a gospel thing.
I just picture him like Kevin Federline, like, yeah, let's go, girl.
Look, I mean, Pete Townshend doesn't need, you know, anything like that. But at the end part of the show, they had, you know, all the lights went out and they had lights doing a choreographed routine. And so we manipulated that. Mm. I mean, it was a fun thing. So we never even got a chance to talk to the Who or see the Who, but I did interact with the person who sang, I think it was America the Beautiful, it could have been the Star Spangled Banner, backstage before the event. And boy, was Queen Latifah a cunt.
Oh, really?
What happened?
Yeah, she was just hanging out back there, and we were just trying to, you know, chat or make conversation. And even if she was like, you know what, I just performed or I'm about to perform, don't bother me. You know, just being respectful, that's fine. But she was just really rude to people. Mm-hmm. And, like, she didn't want to sign any autographs. And she was just very kind of curt and not friendly. So
she looks like a, you know, a tough one about that. Yeah. You know? She's been a big, big fan of hers.
Ladies first.
Yeah, well, you know. So the DJing. Now, from all that philosophy background, study, writing, you DJ now.
Well, I started DJing when I was in college. I had a band called The Factor, and we were a punk band, you know, and I would produce, like, very similar to what you guys were talking about before. You got to make your own shows. You got to produce events. You got to make flyers. You got to promote. This band doesn't get along with this band. This band might draw some more people, but the bassist is a cunt, so you don't want to deal with them. It's the exact same shit, whether it's in music or comedy, or I'm sure even the mime scene has this shit going on, too. I don't fucking know, you know.
Yeah, so, imagine showing up in a mime fight.
Oh, God.
You know? It's great radio, by the way.
Yeah. So, anyway, I would put together playlists and stuff before and after the bands. And then, you know, someone encouraged me to do just a full event without the bands and just DJ. And the original idea was to do music to dance to, not necessarily dance music.
Right.
Because I just, you know, I love a lot of music just to groove to or whatever, but it didn't have to be house music, EDM, or even EDM wasn't even invented at that point.
Right.
But whatever. So it kind of started like that. And when I went to Mongolia, I still worked on it, DJing, and it continued. When I was in South Florida, like I said, I was primarily MC dancing. When I went back to Shanghai, DJing became a much bigger part of what I do.
And they seem like it's bigger, like they're excited about that shit out there.
A bit, yeah. But let's be clear, like, I'm not Steve Aoki playing like EDM in front of 10,000 people and stuff. I've DJed in front of some festivals and stuff. But like I've expanded from not dance music to doing a lot of you know, funk and disco and soul, and I've really developed my skills as a DJing. So in Shanghai, I was part of a group called Trash Agogo, and we produced garage rock groups and brought in international groups. But I don't know if you guys know this, but rock and roll is just about dead.
Well, they were talking about that. You know, it's been talked about. It is dead in the sense that, you know, I mean, everybody's excited about the new band Greta Van Fleet, which is basically a spinoff from Led Zeppelin. They sound just like them. But it's just, you know, but the, you don't have that.
There's some good music that comes out now, and I say rock is just to bug all my rock and roll friends, because I'm primarily still connected with the live music community. But I really like to tell my friend Chachi, who plays in this great band called Round Eye.
He was great in Happy Days too.
Yeah, Joni was a big fan, and so like I tell him, like, we must be like ragtime guys. Like in the 20s, like, ragtime ain't going anywhere. We're studying ragtime. This is what we do. This is our life. And then you get 15 years later and ragtime ain't there. Like, what do you do? Like, what, you know?
But, you know, rock's lasted quite, when you think about all the genres of music. It's probably, it's been
evolved.
It's definitely evolved. It's been around a lot, like jazz, you know, a big band. You know, when you look at all the different musics over time, not many of them, they all came and went. But rock's kind of still lingered and held on to a bit, like rap kind of fell out of place, and it came back a little bit. Disco's gone, right?
Yeah, disco's way gone.
There's neo disco though.
Is that country music is, you know, big?
Yeah, country music actually.
I thought my wife was having sex with a country guy because every time I get in her car, there's country music on. I'm like, what the fuck, man? What's this deal, you know?
Wheeler Walker Jr. is great. Good comedy, good music. I just say that because there was just less energy in the rock music scene in Shanghai. I'm antagonizing my friends, but let me say that to all my friends who are in rock bands.
Yeah.
So are they like depressed comics but musician rockers over there? Like, please come follow me on Facebook. Like, is that their music out there? Like, all depressed and shit? Or, like, is that what you're saying?
Well, I mean, there was just less energy in the local music scene.
Wow.
You know, but it is the same thing with you guys. It's trying to get social media followers, getting people to come to a paying show, not just free shows.
Right.
Come out on a weekday, you know, alternative day, because otherwise the clubs are going to take a bigger percentage. It's the same crap.
Yeah.
But so as the rock scene went down, I was practicing and developing myself and branding myself more as a DJ, picking up the skills picked up from old school hip hop and disco. And I've always tried to know my shit. I try to know, like, there's DJs who don't really know history of music and different eras and decades and stuff. I'm like, I need to know this stuff. Because to me, DJing is all about recontextualizing things and kind of enlightening people a bit. I'm not there to punish people by playing stuff they don't know necessarily, but I want to present things in a new and an interesting way.
Yeah, pretty cool. And yeah, and one of the things we read about, you were one of the first DJs to perform in North Korea.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it was the time of Kim Jong-un or Kim Jong-il, or were they there? Were they present? Was they looking over your shoulder like, what are you playing now, you know?
this is, I guess, 5 years ago now, yeah. It was there was a tour company called Koryo Tours, and the manager of it, because you guys could visit North Korea. If you were like, hey, I want to see what hearts are like in
Listen,
North Korea.
I don't even go to fucking Mexico anymore.
Okay.
I don't know if I'm going to go to fucking North Korea.
Well, anyway.
Yeah, everyone's just going missing now, man. You see those people just going abroad? It's being held up by other countries.
Well, you have the Canadians in China and the North Korea.
Yeah. Now there's one in Russia of an American who was just there just for his brother's wedding. Yeah.
But I just, like, and not to cut you off and not to be rude, I just, you know, I go to Miramar, I go to Cambodia. Like, I just don't let it affect me. Maybe I'm really naive and I'm going to walk into it.
The truth of the matter is you could go to North Korea. You could go to Russia. You can go to all these places, you know.
Or you can go to Parkland and get shot, you know.
Yeah,
like
correct.
You don't want to go if you're going to go to North Korea. I wouldn't wear like a fucking Captain America t-shirt.
No,
you know,
and they hate the Japanese more than they hate the Americans.
Yeah.
So I helped out this tour company guy named Simon for arrange a tour for an artist in China, and he's like, how much should I pay you? And I was like, I don't want any pay, I don't want any compensation, I want to DJ North Korea. And he said no. And then I said, I want to DJ North Korea, and he said no. And it went like that for a couple weeks, and he's like, okay, let's try to figure this out. And it's through Koryo Tours I was able to do it. We went through some different iterations. I was maybe going to DJ like at an embassy, you know, one of the foreign buildings there, but it ended up working out where there was a big karaoke room in a basement next to the main hotel where they have the foreigners stay. And so, you know, it's just like a big basement room. It could look like a basement nightclub. So that's where we ended up having the event. So they put up the flyers and they promoted it to the other people traveling to North Korea. There was a group from Harvard, I believe. And you also had the Red Cross people and the other expats in North Korea. And boy, they came in with song request lists and they were just excited for something going on.
Yeah.
A little bit of
Western culture.
Well, just a little bit, just doing something funky a bit, you know, dancing a bit.
I couldn't imagine there's a lot of, you know, different things to do in North Korea. It's like, they don't have miniature golf.
They have bowling.
They have bowling?
Yeah, we went to the bowling alley there. And see, like, that's just one thing you learn. All right, so I'll just finish in terms of the event. You know, we did the event, the power went out a couple times. But before the event, the North Korean guys would come up to me and they'd be like, so this dancing thing, how does this work? And it's really much like Kevin Bacon, you know.
That's what I was wondering. I'm like, how's he going to sit there and drop a beat or something with these diplomats? Like, how's that going to work?
Well, the diplomats were fine. It was the North Koreans who what's the Kevin Bacon movie where they're not allowed to dance?
Footloose.
There you go. It's the Footloose sort of situation,
right?
Because North Koreans had only ever danced in a choreographed way before.
Yeah, like a nation, like they had the Olympics
marching,
recently.
You know,
the clappy thing.
The traditional things, yeah. So they had never danced before. So how do you tell someone how to dance?
Express themselves openly. That's something you don't do in a communist country, by the way.
Go ahead and express yourself.
What?
Well,
oh, man.
I've been to a couple other communist countries, too. But so we did this thing, and I play different music. They said not to play any South Korean music. I did anyway. But what really got people going was when I would play something like The Twist.
Right. Old time stuff.
By Hank Pelt. Well, stuff where there was a way for the foreign guys to grab the North Koreans and be like, this is how you twist.
Right.
So that just opened up the world. And I just ended up playing like a big survey of Western popular music. The power went out a couple times.
That's
interesting.
It was a good
time I had by all.
That's interesting. That's pretty cool. I mean, you know, that's like introducing it, you know, it's like, then that's what the world needs. You know, it's like, hey, you may not hate us but, you know, even like Kim Jong-un, they said, you know, the guy,
his
father,
a big basketball fan.
Yeah, that, he loved fucking Elvis and, you know, and all that shit and fucking, you know what I mean? It's like the old joke, I can't remember what comic would say, like, hey, you know, they would lighten up in the Middle East if they just let them have strip clubs.
Yeah.
You know, if fucking half the Middle East had strip clubs, these guys wouldn't be so, you know, raping everybody. You know what I mean? Like, things would lighten up a little bit.
Okay, the million-dollar question.
Hit me.
Like, down the road, right? Like, no one's going to know this shit, and someone's going to call in a lifeline because they're going to want to know, what was the first song a DJ ever played in North Korea?
That is a...
You were the guy, right?
That's a great question. What was the first song?
Well, hold on a second.
Do you need a lifeline?
I there's some pictures and videos. Like, I remember, I can tell you some songs that I played, but I don't necessarily remember the first song. Good question.
Well, now it could be a trick question. Now they can say, do you know? And technically, there is no answer to it. So if somebody says, well, it was The Rose by Bette Midler, and you're like, no, it wasn't, asshole, because no one really knows.
I remember people really dug Kiss by Prince, because I love Prince.
Yeah, I love that song. I was a big Prince fan. Like, in high school, I used to sing in a band called Sightless Cry, cover band, and I sang Prince.
Great.
Blue trench coat, high heels and shit, played guitar.
Hell yeah.
Nice.
Got a lot of trim, a lot of girls' parties, a lot of 16-year-old girls' parties.
Dude, Little Red Corvette was like my favorite song.
Fuck yeah.
Dude.
Man, I used to play Prince when in the high school days when you're having sex. Sorry, I had a pretty good high school.
Yeah, much more interesting than my
my high school. Yeah, but then after high school, fuck it, I went to college, and then I didn't go anywhere, you know, anything else.
Well, see, I've done spoken word tours talking about the North Korea experience where I show pictures and stuff, and I mean, I could talk about this for hours and hours because we did do things we probably shouldn't have done, and I, you know, we broke away from the tour group a bit and drank bootleg soju with North Korean dudes and had a good old time.
Yeah, well, like you're worried. You don't want to, I'd be a little nervous to do that. You know, back in the day, my buddy went to Russia to play soccer because I was supposed to go on this trip. It was like one of the Olympic regional teams. It was like 13, 14 or 15, something like that. And I couldn't go because, you know, whatever. And they were going to go and he wanted to bring blue jeans. Like, we were all saying he should bring blue jeans and sell them there. And he was like, I'm like, you know, you're going to get arrested. You imagine you guys going to get pulled out of a fucking hotel because he's selling blue jeans on the black market in Russia.
You know, so I've DJed now in 20 countries over four continents.
Yeah.
And what I like to do is I go to the places and I connect with the people, connect with the local music, and I want to share it with the rest of the world.
That's interesting, man. So, but for the most part, I mean, now, like you're saying, these are just from different events. It's not like these major stadiums and like the light lasers and all that shit going off.
I mean, I've DJed, you know, festivals and stuff, but you know, I DJ 200 gigs a year. So I DJ Saturday mornings at a F45 gym, like a CrossFit type class. I do that. See, I try to be. There's some DJs who could only DJ in one sort of place, one sort of style. I wanted to be like, you can blindfold me, throw me in a burlap sack, put me in front of an audience, and I'll be able to put my own twist on whatever I need to do in the situation. I'm not encouraging you to do that, but it's an option.
Yeah. So, wedding DJ.
I can do that. Yeah, I've done weddings.
Yeah.
What's
your favorite gig then? Like some people say, like as a comic, you can either do a theater, you know, a comedy club, an underground kind of comedy club. You know, but what's like the venue that you say, you know what?
I come from punk rock. Like, I love nothing more than a little, you know,
like dark, nasty, down basement type thing.
Yeah, just like a smaller space, nasty. Although, you know, I was just in Vietnam and DJing on the beach in Vietnam, reggae music. You can't really beat that.
Yeah.
But like, there's a club I'm going back to in Miramar, in Yangon, called Seventh Joint. And it's the only reggae themed place in Miramar. And I DJed there once, and it was like, this is the best.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
you go to like Myanmar, and then you're an Asian country.
Yeah, that's
you know
what I'm saying, and they're just dropping that.
And you're fucking, you know, drinking pina coladas. I don't know.
Yeah. That's having a good time, yeah.
That's why he's wearing what he's got. He's got that fucking, like, the general shit going on. Yeah.
Well, this is my Shanghai security outfit, and I got my buddy Hayasan from Nagoya. He's one of the big reggae DJs in Japan. Shout out to the Total Eyes crew. And my Mongolian hat. Like, you know, I want to pick up... To me, like, DJing isn't about... You know, just playing the hits and trying. I know I'm trying to, you know, I'm sure you guys know this with comedy as well. I'm sure there's a big thing. You know, there's people, comedians who might be crowd pleasers, but the guys in the back don't like it. And really, the people probably forgot every bit of material he did the next day.
Right.
But then there's people who might be less popular, but they're going to run a little deeper. You know, so I'm trying to balance it out. You know, I'm doing a lot of vinyl gigs, and you know, they're good for different reasons. And I love 50s music. I love Elvis. I love rockabilly. And I always find that there's two kind of ways with that. There's in the little basement corner, guys dressed in long black t-shirts with pomade in their hair, playing B-sides from Sun Records, 1956, produced by Bill Justice, and they just stroke their beards and they ponder it. There's that way. And then the other way is like someone says 50s party, but they're actually dressed like hippies and they're playing remixes of stuff, and it really kind of loses the essence of it. Mm-hmm. I kind of want to go the third way in the middle, be able to play some popular music, but also recontextualize things, play more obscure things, and kind of mix it up and do it my own way.
Yeah, man. I mean, I hate when I go to a fucking wedding and they play the chicken dance and the YMCA. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like I've been into conversations at a wedding where they're planning a wedding, and the bride, I can't remember who it was, she's like, I don't want you to play that fucking song. I want you to play, you know, come in here with really good dance music, really good slow, good, you know, different concerto of different music. You know what I mean? From fast to slow to cross ages. You know what I mean?
Well, you have DJs who trade around their crates of music digitally and stuff. And to me, like, I would never want to do that. In other words,
they create a set list or something of songs that, hey, why don't you try this out for your next gig, and they give it to them.
Yeah, like they're trading around set for different events and stuff. I just would never do that.
Yeah, I mean, couldn't. I don't know.
It would be like, you know, in the 50s, there's Shecky Green or something trading jokes, like vaudeville stuff.
Play.
Yeah, well, see, that's why I really try to develop DJ technique and stuff, and not necessarily be wonky with it. And I can do experimental sets, and I play with great musicians as well. I can DJ with a live band and do that.
I grew up with turntablists like Kid Koala,
people on
Ninja Tune Records. You know what I'm saying? Hextatic.
I DJed with guys in Ninja Tune.
I loved Cold Cut, man. Yeah. Matt Black, Jonathan Moore. I interviewed them in college.
Great.
I grew up. I toured. I was actually an underground junglist MC, and
interesting.
With Ace Logic, we had our own thing. It was fun. We played some stuff, but that was our stuff. Was our jungle drum and bass, like 90s, straight up like that back then, like the trashy, dirty. That was how we came in. It sounded like you're extremely eclectic. You're very world traveled with yours. I mean, ours was just like basically drugs happened, and as long as you MC'd in front of that, you'd be like, there's a cow that just died. Everyone's like, yeah, and you're like, all right, and you got paid. It was weird. But you sound like you're going around the world and you're doing these cool things. I really like this.
Yeah, like I want to develop into be a better technical DJ. Like I let's be clear, I am not DJ Kid Koala. I'm not, you know, I don't have that technical ability, but what I'm trying to do is a little different in that I'm taking the tunes.
So you got the whole turntable thing, it's digital, you said the vinyl.
I can do it any other way anyway.
Yeah. I remember back in talking about Winter Circle, this comedy club in Lakeland, Florida. They do shows every Friday night out there, and some of the greatest wings, chicken wings, teriyaki, chippy chicken wings, fucking.
You can get some good teriyaki in Japan.
I bet, man. Teriyaki is my, you know, my wife and I were on a cruise one time, and we did this, they had this like, it was like the newlywed game kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, out they had and they called us, and one of the questions they asked her was, what is my favorite condiment? And I'm like, I'm a French fry guy, so fucking ketchup. My wife's like, soy sauce. Like, fuck, I should have thought soy sauce. And I'm like, that's so stupid of me.
Yeah,
it's typical. Well, dude, I mean, but that's interesting you say about that, because to me, first of all, somebody, like, I play guitar, right? I don't play as, no, let me take that. I played guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And I have acoustic in the room. I can strum some chords. I still have an ear for it.
Do you still put on your high heels and sing
no,
kids songs?
No, more high heels.
Just wondering, okay.
Yeah, sometimes when I'm lonely in the weekend,
okay.
I break out the old jacket. But but I go to like karaoke and stuff. It's funny. I go to karaoke with comics. Like, holy fuck, this guy's got some lungs on him. But I want to start playing so somebody I can write parody songs and stuff. And people are like, but just the fact of I have to take the fucking the guitar with me everywhere is a deal breaker. Yeah. I'm like, you know what? I don't want to have to deal with that.
That was my dad. He was a blues musician. He used to say, "We don't get paid to play. We get paid to lug this friggin' equipment."
Trump. and in this way, I'm a real big asshole to myself because like I really work hard. I take it seriously. You know, there's a lot of DJs who, you know, they're doing it for, you know, they want to get high. They want to like, but so for example, I'll bring a record player to Bangladesh. And I've brought record players to Cambodia and stuff because I feel like it would add to the show. So I want to do it. And it's a pain in the butt to lug the stuff around and stuff. And I live in Shanghai. The rent is super duper expensive. I live on a 6-floor walk up. And it's a pain in the ass bringing up turntables and stuff. That's what New Year's Eve after the gig, I had to bring my two fucking turntables up to the 6th floor.
See, that right there is like, fuck it. You know what I mean? Nope. I can't do that. You know, nope. I imagine like, okay, if I have my guitar and I go on the road, where am I going to check my guitar? I can't fit it in the overhead.
This connects you to I love the stories of, you know, Benny Goodman and stuff.
Right.
Like, you know, they recently had the, it was recently Christmas, of course, and there's that famous story. It's usually credited to Benny Goodman, but sometimes you hear it for different people. And, you know, they're doing a holiday tour of this big band on a bus, and the bus breaks down. It's December 24th, and they're lugging their trombones and the trumpets, walking by houses with the Christmas lights, and you can see the families inside cutting the Christmas ham. And then one musician goes to the other one, "Man, how can people live like that?" You know, to me, like, it's, you know, you're an artist, you go on the road, you travel, you do your thing,
which is
why I'm so fascinated by what you're doing here, because like I said, you're taking the other way around, whereas I probably could have started focusing, staying in Coral Springs and DJing, you know, and trying to build a scene here.
Well, you know, in comedy, this is a big conversation in comedy. Like, you get to a point, you go to LA, you go to New York.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I wasn't a fiduciary by day and had a home here and family, I may have probably already been in New York. But nowadays, you know, to me, it's all about just polishing it, getting it, making that package, making the product itself even better and better. So that when I do go, you know, like I said, I was just in L.A. back a week before Christmas, and it felt great because there was notoriety already. You know, I live in Florida, and I was getting recognized. I'm getting work as if I lived there.
Yep.
You know, it's common. So you may not have to. And it's, you know, people say, like, people want to be credited on decisions. Most of the time, you know, there's in philosophy, I remember having this conversation. It was like, there's a James Bond theory. In the sense, like, James,
no, Socrates said that.
Yeah, I think it was Socrates. He's talking about James Bond. He was very foresightful.
He was more of a Sean Connery guy, though.
Yeah,
Timothy Dalton.
But the idea is that James Bond's in a room and the walls begin to close in. So all of a sudden, a trap door opens up. You got to jump through it. You always have to take your next best option. In a sense, sometimes you make decisions. Not because the walls are closing and they may feel like it, but you make decisions.
You have to. You have to do something.
That is the most important thing in life, is being able to make decisions, and not only do that, not get stuck in not making decisions.
Yeah.
Getting caught up in what if I do this? What if I did? Never making a decision, right? And then the other part is that once you make decisions, people can't handle the consequences of making those decisions.
Well, here's a philosophy metaphor that you might appreciate. There's the starving mule who's got food equidistant on the left and right. He could go this way, he could go that way, but because neither one is closer, he stays in the middle and starves to death, you know? You need to make a decision. And it's so funny talking about this because a good buddy of mine growing up, his name is Troy Davidson, and he's a professional clown here in Coral Springs.
Yeah.
And so he got married, and he's talking about, you know, his wife wants to get a house now, and these are like important decisions here, and I'm in Shanghai, I'm not married, but there's, you know, there's not a right or wrong decision with any of this stuff.
One of the best examples I've ever seen of this was, I was at a really rich wedding, really nice, and the band, they looked like they were as rich as the people were. Mm-hmm. So, and you know, when you're on the circuit and you see somebody, you're like, who are they? You know what I'm saying? Like, something's up. So I walk over and I walk up to these guys. I'm like, listen, man, I've done a whole lot of stuff. You guys are the nicest, sharpest band I've ever seen. Like, and your music's really good. They all start laughing. They're like, well, we're all doctors and we're lifelong friends. So we all decided to become doctors so that we could be musicians. And so that was their deal.
Yeah, All of Me, the Steve Martin film, one of my favorite comedy films, is about this, where he's a jazz player and wants to do law. I mean, it's tough.
Look at recently the Brian May from Queen.
Yeah,
he's an astrophysicist. He's a fucking rocket scientist, and he's the one that they just had that thing to go by that object out, and that looked like a bowling pin.
Yeah,
and he was the one who basically forefronted the whole thing, who watched the whole thing, or got it all organized to check this thing out. And you're like, so how could they? But that's like, to me, I've always been that way. I was in martial arts, music, soccer, and I got out of college and I did all kinds of crazy things. I did armed security work, and then I did fighting, and Thai boxing, and the acting and the comedy. I don't know, there's so much. It's like TV. There are so many fucking channels and so many things to watch and shows nowadays that as a human being, you can't just be, this is what I do and that's it.
No, and I try to do a lot of things in my skill set and develop things outside of it, not keep an open mind. It's tough, I was working doing nightlife stuff, and then I got it down to I was working part-time. And then I got it down to where I was working seasonally. And now I'm able to do this stuff full-time. And it's just being able to, manage what you can do.
So this is your full-time gig now as DJ?
I do DJing and event production. Yeah. So I'll produce events for, different brands and stuff and corporate events. But for the most part...
And living in Shanghai. You're in China.
Yeah.
Yeah. And speaking Chinese.
A little bit. Yeah. I speak Shanghai Chinese.
Yeah.
Shanghai has a great legacy of jazz, opium, and whores. And we try to keep that kind of going in our own way, But Shanghai, my Mongolian is better than my Chinese.
Yeah. I was one of the things I always want to learn some Chinese, honestly. My Cambodian's rough. Cambodian's
we got to talk about Cambodia. Yeah. I love Phnom Penh is one of my favorite cities to visit around. They are excited. That's Phnom Penh reminds me of Shanghai 8 years ago, 7 years ago, where everyone's like, all right, our economy was shit, but we're building up now. And there's not a lot of old timers in the music scene who are going to establish the roles. Everything is for the getting. Mm. So I can recommend some great restaurants, some great music coming out of Phnom Penh too.
Yeah. I always joke around because when I started dating my wife, they always would have karaoke, and there's a reason why there's no fucking karaoke Cambodian Idol. The music is not.
Oh man, I can recommend some great. So let me tell you about a project that I'm working on that will associate that. There's a CD going to be coming out in early February. I can show you a mock-up of it, actually, called Spin Magazine, of course, presents Eclectic Asia. And so it's music from all around Asia, and I am the A&R artist and repertory for it. So I chose all the music from for the CD. So look out for that. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'll post a picture or something on the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. So that's got Korean rockabilly music. It's got music from Cambodia. The Cambodian mothership. The Cambodian mothership, yes. So is a group in Cambodia that kind of mixes garage rock with traditional Cambodian music.
Yeah.
And they have a Iggy Pop tribute album coming out soon.
Oh, really?
There's some great hip-hop from a group called Clap Your Hands. Initial G. There's some interesting music coming out.
Well, this
out
definitely
Cambodia.
Wasn't the music that my in-laws
had. But do in-laws ever have good music?
They always had
Come
the
on.
Traditional, like, bang, zam, bang, dang. Every guy trying to get his girl back after fucking
you gotta, up. Oh, you got to get some groovy Suriname, I'm going to mispronounce the names. Suriname Sam. There was a real groovy guy in the 60s. They were all wiped away when Pol Pot came in. They were all, they had an entire music scene community. And then, completely wiped out. So then, things are redeveloping now. But the mothership, the Cambodian Space Project, and
pretty cool.
A lot of cool music out there.
Well, I wish we had more time. The show, we didn't even get to our news or anything. It's been a great show talking about all kinds of things. And that's all we have time for on the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. Again, I want to thank my guests, of course, Brian Offenther.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much,
and,
Dougie.
And Jay Risk for
thank
joining
you guys
us
very
today.
Much. And you're very interesting. And thank you, Dougie.
Yeah. Where you can too. They follow and get find out more about you?
People should go to the Art Gear page on YouTube or Facebook, ArtGear, or find Brian Offenther on Facebook. And I got a lot more stuff coming up.
Very cool. How about you, Jay?
Just look for me on Facebook, Jay Risk, or at Jay Risk Comedy.
There you go. And, boy, this get the Saturday. Go to the Underground's Coffee House competition. Spill the Beans competition. I'll be there, so come out and join it. From the show, Jackie Sanchez on that show. We'll be competing and some other folks. Next week, I'm going to be in Wichita at the Looney Bin from Thursday through Saturday. And the week after, I'm going to be in Tulsa. Look at me. Lucky me.
Yeah.
Going to go to Wichita and Tulsa in the middle of January. Looney Bin in Tulsa that Wednesday through Sunday. Had to change my flight. I thought I was coming home Sunday. And I realized, fuck, I got a show Sunday. But go to DougieAlmeida.com for more dates. Follow me at Dougie Dangerous on Instagram and Twitter. And by the way, join our fan page on Facebook, A Wake Up Late with Dougie Show. We're going to start broadcasting the shows through there pretty soon. And follow us on Twitter at Wake Up Dougie. And go to Wake Up Late with Dougie Show at Podbean. That's our archive site. Become a patron listener. Donate $1, $2 a month. Goes to gas money for the co-host and stuff. So thanks for coming in, guys. Enjoy it. And we'll be back next week with all new shows right here at the same spot. Take care.
Came a voice from the sky on a magical night. And yellow colors of a thousand sunsets, they traveled to the world on a silvery light. The people of the earth stood waiting, watching as the ships came one by one. Setting fire to the sky as he landed, carrying to the world children of the sun. Children of the sun. All at once came a sound from inside. Thick beam of light hit the ground.